This program brought to you by Vanderbilt University. You can find more audio and video on our website, vanderbilt.edu/news.
Thank you. I heard on NPR about a week ago something about the Cal Turner Center of Moral Leadership, and then the next event is Cal Turner, and I thought, how self-serving can you get? But thank you for being here. I had difficulty in cutting back my material for today because Graham asked me to come and talk about failures from the leadership perspective, and I have a lot of material and hope to use just the ones that might resonate with you, because I consider this meeting to be about you. I have had about a 50-year fascination with the subject of leadership. What it is, what it means. And today, as I look at our times, and all of the change, and the finger-pointing, and the blaming, and the negative spin on almost everything, I realize we have a crying need for moral leadership, whatever that is. Whatever it is. What is it? What does it mean? And as I look back on my career, I realize that it was the failures, it was the gaps that proved to be the best opportunity for growth and development. So maybe the encouragement I can offer today is that the best opportunity to grow and develop comes in bad times, in difficult times, in trying times. Now, if I had to have a title for my remarks, I would use it. I couldn't use it at church. They wouldn't let me put it in the bulletin for my remarks, but the title of the sermon I wanted to give was Life's Crap Can Be God's Fertilizer. I think it sort of preaches itself. But let me share with you at as deep a level as I can in this venue and ask you to think about your version of what I am trying to share with you. I believe our Creator hardwired us for this concept of leadership. And I believe each of us should inspect that internal stuff, what you were given, strengths and weaknesses, your basket of talents, and put your hand in the hand of your Creator and try to develop it as life will test it. It will surely test it. Now, as you know, I had a career in Dollar General. And I confess to you that growing up, I had a love-hate relationship with that company because it seemed to rob me of my father. It monopolized the conversation at the dinner table and before dinner, before Grandma's wonderful cooking, because Papa and my Dad would talk about business. Before I even matriculated to the first grade, I did store visits with my Dad. I only got to be with him in a business way. Even Sunday afternoon golf, for him was caddying for me. And I had the self-fulfilling fear that I would not be able to find the ball that he had hit. And I couldn't find it. And today on the golf course, I can't find the ball. And it's golf feels like work to me because of that early association. Well, there were there were two Turner boys, wired very differently. I've pursued the business, and that's another whole story that I won't get into, because I felt that it was what I was called to do. It was life's greatest challenge to me. And I hope you will always be person enough to undertake life's greatest challenge for you. And the business was for me because I would have no identity, because I just sort of inherited the job as boss's son, and my name was even an imitation of him, Cal Jr. But the younger brother was very different. And different in wonderful ways. Wanting to be a lawyer, but my dad insisted, this is my dad's perspective, that instead he should be productive. And so he must come into the business. Well, let me take you through some of my greatest failure and process that so that you can understand that only when I came to own my failure was I able to do anything about the failure of the company and the failure of others. A leader has to be willing to seek the truth in here. Well, our company was a growing company. It was a family business, never mind that we were a public company, and had major responsibility to the shareholders, and we did seek to meet that responsibility, but we thought if we took care of the family business first, it would take care of the business for the public shareholder, and that was true until the year of 1988. Businesses do a lot of things wrong, and they try to put a spin on their successes, but I can tell you that our company was very interested in the Florida market, and we had an opportunity to do an acquisition that would get us into the Florida market in a major way. But before doing that acquisition, we were required to do a prerequisite acquisition. And the combination of two acquisitions in 15 months put our company on the verge of Chapter 11. Now, when you have to change, when life requires change, you must have the courage to seek that change and to go for that change. But we had one brother who was the CEO and one brother who was the COO, who the COO did not want to change in the way that the CEO wanted to change. It was a pretty fundamental disagreement. But I realized that the problem at Dollar General was not that we were on the verge of Chapter 11. The problem was that we had no leadership because brother number one was victimized by the family politics and the disagreements within the family, and he knew he couldn't lead, and he accepted that he couldn't lead. Now, that is the worst possible circumstance to be in, when the leader buys into his or her inability to lead. That is the ultimate cop-out. So the problem wasn't that we were in trouble in our stores, though we were, that we were in violation of covenants of our loan agreement. We were. The problem was the leadership at the top. And the decision making was the most emotional exercise of my life. And I shared it, and our family processed it. And my father and my brother hoped that I would get over it. But I knew that one brother had to step up to the plate and the other had to leave the company. I fired my brother. It devastated our family. And that was just the start of the year of 1988. That happened in January. In July, very unexpectedly, my mother died, and we lost the family glue, the wonderful, nurturing, loving, pulling us all together dynamic of our family was our mother. And it happened on the heels of the family problems in January, where I had fired my brother. And it happened when a major company turnaround was underway with brand new management team, a brand new independent board of directors, and a grieving founder of the company who had lost the love of his life. And the only remaining love of his life in that sense was his baby, the business. And his lifeline was grabbing hold of the business at the time that the CEO of the company was trying for the first time to perform as CEO in major change, and the founder disagreed with the change. How could it possibly be that in January, the major trauma of the brother, in July, the trauma of loss of mother, and then in November, the board of directors of the company, when it heard that my dad did not want an agenda of MIS change to even be brought to the board and would threaten to resign if it did, the board said, "Cal, we don't have an MIS problem, we have a leadership problem. We're going to force your dad out." I said, "That might kill him." And I'll never forget their response. "It is time for you to put family second. You have a responsibility to thousands of people who are here in support of your leadership, and you can't lead. This is what you have to do." Well, it's probably too emotional for me to get into how that got presented to my dad. That the meeting I had after that when I went the day before the board meeting because I couldn't let my father be surprised. And he lit up. Hi, son. He always lit up when I came in the room. My lifelong mentor. And I had his resignation to put in front of him. And I couldn't even say hello or anything. I just put it in front of him for him to sign. 2 weeks later, he and I were communicating through lawyers. We were counting shareholder votes to determine what board of directors we could elect, because he was determined to fire two of the four outside directors, and he had the votes to do it. Now, here I was. I was called into this business. I knew it was my calling. I knew it was life's greatest challenge. And why, oh why, Lord, do you put me into this crap right now? There is tough company decision making. There is emotional family decision making. It all is coming together. And why should it all come together now? That's how life is. All the bad stuff seems to coexist with other bad stuff. And that's when leadership is really tested. We got through all of that. And we elected a different board. And I put public spin on it so that no one really knew what was going on. But the turnaround wasn't happening. All this we'd gone through. And it just wasn't coming together. And then my father pulled one more stunt that really annoyed the you-know-what out of me. We had a drug-free policy of management, and we did a surprise drug test of about 125 district managers. Everyone passed except one. And this one happened to be the son of my father's pet in the company. And one more time, my dad got right in the way, and he said, "You're not going to fire him. His father has done more for this company than your whole management team put together, and we owe it to him. We're not going to fire his son." And I said, "Yes, we are." And we did. And then I thought, I have to get the old man under control, don't I? Well, how do I do that? I know how I will do that, and here is my script. I will go to Scottsville and I will say, "Daddy, look, our family has gone through hell. We've been torn apart, and we had one more problem, and you and I got at odds with each other about this firing. It hurts too much. I don't want us to go through this anymore. And I think it is time for the whole family to agree that we should sell Dollar General. And then let's get family back." Well, I knew exactly what he would say. He would say, Then I would say, "Okay, well then will you behave? Here are some things I need from you." So I went through my spiel. And so, "Daddy, let's sell Dollar General." And he said, "Okay." And I said, "Okay, well. Well, now, I can't keep this a secret from the management team. So I'm going to let them know this is our agenda, but I'm going to bring them into the agenda, and I'm going to invite them to take to the board a compensation plan that will reward them upon the successful sale of the company. We have to get the company in better shape before it's ready to sell. Ironically, when they did that and the board approved it, the turnaround started. When others were brought into the agenda, when it was shared with others, this very difficult stuff that wasn't working, but we brought them into it and gave them an ownership stake in successfully resolving it, the success happened. So it's hard. Sometimes success doesn't come in the way you engineer it. And yet we ought to accept it. I mean, if it happens, but understand that. So these are some failings that even tear at me today. I'll never forget my brother saying to me, "You're going to have to step up to the plate, deny me my birthright. This company's my birthright too, you know. Fire me and live with that the rest of your life." Well, I still live with that. When you are a true leader seeking the change that you are uniquely positioned under God to render, you may have scars the rest of your life. And yet, the growth and development of your potential comes along with those scars. And one of the first leadership requirements is to get over yourself, get over being sorry for yourself, for whatever it is that's difficult or wrong or bad in life for you now or for me now, to get over it and get on with what can be done. Failures. My hope for you is that you're a good steward of your failures. I hope you listen really hard to your Creator in those times of failure for the lesson to be learned. Other people are going to tell you what you want to hear. The truth, as they see it, they might say to others, but not to you if it's your responsibility. So the real leadership agenda is in here, but it projects out there. And what you model is your greatest opportunity to influence others. So you are a leader, whether anybody is assigned to you in responsibility or not. You are positioned to be a leader. And what you model in your life today, when our world is hurting, is your leadership opportunity. This was heavy stuff. I would say that there was humor along the way. The godsend of laughing. I had to open myself up to others and share with them. But that empowered them and all of us to pull together. So those who criticize our society and say that leadership isn't taught, although I believe them to be right, are not right in the way they think. I don't think leadership can be taught. I think it has to be learned. And I think you have opportunity to learn it as you pursue God's fertilizer in the form of life's, you know what. Thank you. This is essentially what I hope to share with you. I don't know if there's any discussion, question, or whatever. What's going on with you? What would you like to talk about today?
Would you have done anything different looking back?
Well, I think so, and I would have probably discovered something else that might not have worked too well, but I'd have had a different mistake. I think I would have questioned the givens of my life. Given that brother really wanted to be a lawyer, should I have pushed back? His positioning in the company was that future problem which had to occur. It wasn't his fault. It wasn't my fault. It's just the nature of the sibling rivalry beyond which we couldn't get. And sometimes there are positionings of human talent in roles that require what that talent can't do in that role with the various players you have to interface with. I believe I have at times gotten too involved in the doing of whatever was going on to pull myself back up to the big picture of the being component. To me, life is a balance between being, that is mission and purpose and values and the doing. And the best doing comes out of some thought to the being stuff. After all, if you're in a position of power, there is a dimension of impotence to that power. You can't do everything. People are going to mess up. What are you going to do in response to their mess up? That's the issue. If you have the grace of knowing that you have been forgiven by your Creator, then you're positioned to forgive others and to help them, and then they're in a position to be more honest about what's going on. The best management manual is the good book. It's the ethics of that. But I don't think you get the ethics of it unless you get some of the spiritual background to those ethics. My mother used to say, "Cal Jr., for a good boy, you sure get into a lot of trouble." And she was so right. I mean, my mother understood management, I think, better than my father, because she managed all of us pretty well. She grew up with three brothers, and she knew how to control men. Now look, men don't know how to control men. Women know it better. And I think the dimension of leadership that we need in our society today might be associated more with the female qualities than the male qualities. The qualities of empowerment, inclusion, mutual search for the truth, bringing people together. And I think every male here has more leadership limitation than every female, to tell you the truth. Yes, sir.
Kurt, given what you said about leadership being learned by being taught, what are your sense on those institutions that attempt to promote leadership, you know, structured leadership, models of character, models of leadership principles, like in the armed forces or Procter & Gamble in the old days, or IBM, Xerox, they have these programs where they taught and evaluated leadership over the course of the career. What do you think about those approaches to developing leadership?
And the corporate approaches to do it?
Yes, sir.
I think it is probably easier to learn in the corporate venue than the academic venue because you have everybody's attention better. And questions are raised with great seriousness there. Performance and success there require that whatever this leadership stuff is be learned. And especially if the number one person in that company is committed to leadership and leadership development. In our company, I convened every single leadership training meeting and shared with them and then returned after that three-day experience to get their debriefing of what they had learned. And everybody pays attention to what the boss pays attention to. So in the corporate sector, there is real opportunity to do it. It's not really well understood, even out there in the corporate world, what it really is. Our company was giving a presentation at a big Wall Street gathering of retailers, and I went to be nice to the competition there that their president was presenting, and he surprised me by saying, "Do you know how we do strategic planning at," and he named his company. I said, "No." He said, "We watch Dollar General, and we hope you're good at it." Leadership is not about emulating the competition. It's not about bettering the competition. Leadership is about giving your best response to your customer. Your best response. And strategy, by definition, to me, is the responding to the customer pull on your future as an organization. What it is that the customer needs of you. Maybe the customer can't articulate it, but you need to know your customer well enough to know what you uniquely are positioned to do. Leadership in a company is the same as leadership of an individual. What are you as a company, or you as an individual, uniquely positioned to accomplish or to be a part of? Because nobody is like you. Don't try to be like somebody else. Be yourself to God's fullest intention. That's leadership.
What is your vision for moral leadership in the professions?
Well, I that every profession will ask itself how to get over itself. Understanding your limitations and your gaps as a profession can help you to set a higher course of action that serves society in different and better ways. Whatever your profession, every profession is messed up in unique ways. Everything on earth is messed up. So we ought to feel, as potential leaders, that we're empowered to do a lot of changing. Because guess what? Life is messed up. Professions are messed up. I don't want to impose my vision. Leadership is about getting vision into those who implement. And so I can't say that I have a grand vision to present. I understand the questions, not the answers. Or I understand some of the questions. Every now and then, though, a lot of our people would come up and say, that's the wrong question. There was one statement made to me in strategic planning that changed the course of the company forever. This person said, Cal, let me tell you what's wrong with this company. It's that you and your dad always quote your grandfather who said, if it's bought right, it's half sold. Well, yes, that's a truth of our company. They said, so look at all this half-sold inventory we're stuck with. How can we work on the other half? The other half is the customer. Our company has a buyer push dynamic. If it's bought right, it's half sold. We need a customer pull dynamic on this company. Well, guess what? That would mean our becoming strong at everything we're weak at now. That's a big undertaking. But maybe we together could do that. And the company came to life. So I guess my vision is openness to good questions in every profession. Yes?
I'm wondering if you have any ideas on how we can influence more like business leaders, professional leaders, to become moral leaders, especially when they have the dual responsibility like you did to shareholders, and then how to move that on to society.
Well, no matter how many people report to you, what you model is your greatest influence. If you're honestly open to the truth, your whole organization will be more open to it, and together you can surprise yourselves at positive outcomes, because the truth does set you free. I'll abbreviate the story, but a new vice president of merchandising told me I didn't visit stores right when he was visiting stores with me. That he said, in all the other retail companies, the top guy tells everybody what to do and everybody takes notes, and that's the store visit. Thank you. But you just ask questions, gals. You don't tell anybody what to do. What he didn't know is I didn't know what to tell him. That's why I ask questions. But he said, so I'm asking questions. I said, I know. And you're asking Miss Fessy questions? And he said, Miss Fessy, so let me tell you about Miss Fessy. She was a beloved teacher and an institution in Scottsville, Kentucky. She taught my mother and my father and all four of us kids. And everybody loved Miss Fessy, but she was an awful teacher. She'd say, now students, is peristalsis the name of the process by which food passes through the intestine? Yes, Miss Fessy. And is so-and-so-and-so-and-so? No, Miss Fessy. So you're going out and you're saying to the store manager, now, is my planogram doing everything for you that you want it to do? Yes, Mr. Ennis. Are you having any trouble with the memos out of the home office? No, Mr. Ennis. No, Miss. He said, well, Cal, the way you ask questions encourages them to tell you what's wrong. How do you ask questions? How do you ask questions? Do you really want the truth? If you're going to get the truth, there are a lot of interpersonal barriers. You have to establish a rapport with the other person that allows the truth to come out. That's, to me, some of the best of moral leadership. To seek the truth together and to respond to it together.
Your growing up was under the influence of your father. So that was your mentoring. That's how you learned to be the leader, as well as your own part of that. Are there any things looking back that you would say would be great learning experiences for the beginning person who doesn't know they're going to be a Dollar General leader or a physician or anyone else? Are there things that you could imagine would have been helpful for you, would have given you tools to deal better with what you had to deal with?
Perhaps I don't have any real specifics. When my son was about 7, he said to me, Dad, did you know it's hard to be your son? And I said, no, I didn't know. What do you mean? He said, it's hard to be your son because you have to be nice to everybody all the time, whether you feel like it or not. I never told him that. I never did tell him that. He observed. It is life's greatest opportunity to invest in a relationship that creates the development. Time with, being present when you're with your kids or your spouses or your friends, getting all those other things at least on the back burner so that you're present. No, I don't guess I have any specifics, sorry.
I got one for you. You worked out of 1988 towards being a encouraging kind of leader, trusting others, bringing them into decisions and responsibility. And sometimes it pays off, and as you know, sometimes it's misplaced. Can you talk about what leadership feels like when others have disappointed you, and what the kind of recovery for that?
the hardest thing to do in management is to terminate someone. It's hard. And the more I thought about it, I began to wonder if I wasn't needing to feel bad each time, so I made myself feel bad so I'd feel better about myself because I felt bad. It's awful. It's awful for I think first any organization needs guiding principles that everybody understands. What are your values as an organization? And we had those on a card, and we worked on it every time we did strategic planning to change the value statement to get it right as a team. And I would stand in front of those leadership meetings and I'd say, let me show you this card that has our values on it and tell you, let me try to motivate you positively or negatively. If you want to know how to get ahead in Dollar General, it's on this card. This is how you get ahead in this company. Now, that may not motivate you, so let me try this. If you want to know how you can get your butt fired the quickest, it's on this card. These are the givens, the principles. And then you have to go back to them. And every time somebody failed and was terminated from the company, I put myself through the practice of going back to that card to see if it was on that card, and it was. I never found it not to be. So there, I think, Jim, there have to be some standards that are bigger than you and that other person that you both know are there not to be violated. And then as a leader, it's your judgment about whether they're violated, and everyone will accept it better. But it's hard. It's ironic to me is that some of my best friends today are people that I terminated back there. I think that's kind of strange.
I work with companies that have a certain kind of problem. I talk with CEOs, and I'll have CEOs say, that sort of thing doesn't go on in good companies. And they wrinkle their brow and nod their head, and they say, that couldn't go on. The CEO is a good guy. And given that the CEO is a good guy, how does he or she try to make sure that the kind of values that are on your card, that are on the website, that are framed at headquarters, actually are being carried out on the ground, out on the front line, where you're interfacing the neighbors, the community, and the customers?
It's surprising what can go on in the company where the CEO is a good guy.
Yes, sir.
And that was an untrue truth that person, because the CEO is good, doesn't mean that there's not all these things that can go on out here. Because the trouble with human nature is how many other people have it. Mine doesn't bother me, but everybody, you know, and where people come together, there are going to be those problems. Now, I think, let me just mention the last failure of my career. The company took a stand for its values and had major success for all of its constituencies. And it was almost as if the company could walk on water. And the CEO of that company is a good person. But within 2 months of my father's death, our company had to come forward to say our financial statements are wrong. We have to restate our financials. And
the reaction that had to it. Long-standing shareholders said, it's just like I feel the way I did when my dog died. Because they really were cooking the books. That was just felt like an arrow to my heart. And I told you that the toughest thing was to fire someone. At the end of my career, I fired myself. It was the thing to do. And today, there's no Turner connection with that company at all. The company is doing well. But you don't know what you have in any person until things really go wrong and you see the response of that person. I think it's a matter of figuring out how to forgive people when they don't do right, rather than how to make them do right. Because they're not going to do right all the time. I'm not going to do right all the time. My dad had a management style of being the boss and telling everybody what to do, and I decided to have the opposite persona. I was going to be a nice person. And then I got some feedback about how that persona didn't work. When I met a clerk in the store, and she said, "Mr. Turner," I said, "I have been told what it'd be like when I meet you." "Oh, well, okay, tell me what told." He said, "I was told that you would only say nice things, and I should only say nice things, and I would like you, and it wouldn't be till the day after your visit when the district manager walked through the front door and hit the fan, we really knew what you thought." And I thought, oh my goodness, you can be a boss and be a bad persona, or you can be a good guy. And then when others have to follow up to correct things, then you have the reputation of being two-faced. So there are traps to everything. And I guess the leader is always asking, okay, where is life's present mess?
To think for a minute about the future leaders, and those are the children that are in classrooms now.
Yeah.
And in all kinds of communities that have a wealth of resources and communities that don't. So my question for you is, what would you say to teachers who are trying to nurture the future leaders that we need in this nation?
I hope that every teacher can inspire students for lifelong learning. It isn't so much knowledge achievement as excitement and interest in learning and growing. That's the what a profession, being a teacher and being responsible for that very influenced and malleable human talent. That's just a great thing. I went to public schools in this little town in Kentucky, and when I came to Vanderbilt, I was struggling. And I found my counterparts from, at that time, MBA or Harpeth Hall or other private schools were having no difficulty at all in their freshman year. No difficulty at all. I started out hitting it hard, and I discovered I had passed them by the second semester when they were still happy in their accomplishment. But anyone who takes on the agenda of learning is someone who has been well taught by teacher, by minister, by father, by mother, by whomever.
Mr. Turner, it's 9 o'clock. I want to thank you very much for your time. Thank you for engaging us. I can't help but be reminded that yesterday was Ash Wednesday, and think about how you talked about the pain of your own life and the leadership lessons therein. So it's been very powerful. Thank you very much.